This episode is brought to you by Seems Easy Record Sleeve Repair Strips. If you collect used records, you need some Seems Easy strips handy for record sleeve repair. They're super easy to use and repair those seam splits to make them like new.
Ask your record store for Seems Easy or go to SeemsEasy.com.
Seems Easy with two Z's. SeemsEasy.com. And now, on with the show. Hey everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 392 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today we have on the show Mr. Gino Yevgevovich, who has an absolutely incredible story of music, records, and making art in the middle of a war zone. And Gino was an absolute superstar in the Balkans in the late 80s. He was brought up with a life of privilege. His mother was a judge on their Supreme Court. Gino formed a band. He sold a lot of records, and at the height of his fame, the Bosnia-Herzegovina conflict broke out, and Gino and his friends in Sarajevo braved nightly sniper fire to put on music in the middle of a war. It's a crazy story, but it's true. And Gino now lives in the U.S. after being discovered in Sarajevo by many artists, including Joan Baez, and his band, Culture Shock, has many albums available through Billy Gould's Cool Arrow Records, and more recently, Alternative Tentacles, the label owned and operated by Jello Biafra. Now, we discuss all of that today, as well as the new Culture Shock single, King Country Mohammed, on limited blue vinyl, available for as long as it lasts at AlternativeTentacles.com. Now, Gino tells an absolutely fascinating story today, and we have over 30 extra minutes of this discussion available only to our show supporters at patreon.com/vinylguide. You too can help support our show, keep the Vinyl Guide podcast going, and get all sorts of extras like extended episodes, commercial-free episodes, high-resolution audio files, and a bunch more. So head up there now and become a supporter. That's patreon.com/vinylguide. And with that, let's head into the amazing origin story of Gino Yevgevovich of Culture Shock. Mr. Gino.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you very well. You've got a very a very low, very manly voice.
No, it's morning, my friend. I can do very high.
Good.
Great to meet you.
Great to meet you. And apologies, we had to push this out. I got COVID about a week ago. And yeah, I'm still not feeling great. So, but is what it is, man. Look, I've been really looking forward to this conversation, and I want to make sure that all the listeners are aware of the record that you have out now and some of the ones you have coming out. Culture Shock, King with the backside Country Mohammed. There's a blue single available at Alternative Tentacles. You can get one at cultureshock.com. That's culture with a K and no E. Or alternativetentacles.com. Now, Gino, you've been mates with Jello Biafra for years. And is this your first release on Alternative Tentacles?
Yeah, that's really funny. That's actually really a funny story. A long time ago, like 1997 or something like that, my friend Chris Novoselic brought a guy to one of the first shows. We used to be a acoustic band. We played when we left Sarajevo. It's a long story. I was friends with Joan Baez. I still am. And we played acoustically with her. And then I really didn't like that. It was just like not fitting my real emotions at that moment. and then we plugged in, and on one of those first shows, we didn't even know what we were playing. Chris brought a guy who, you know, wanted to introduce to me, and he said, "Hey, Gino, let me introduce you to somebody. This is Jello Biafra." And I'm like, "Fuck!" First time, I was like, "Okay, I should have recognized the guy." And then the voice, like, "You shouldn't recognize the guy. You know how you don't know the guy. You know the guy from the pictures, right?" And then we talked and talked, and like we knew each other. You know, when you click with people, on a sense of humor and on your political or entire political views, doesn't matter. But anyway, it's not about your musician and their musician or your, you know, a plumber and their plumbers. It doesn't matter. Plumbers, musicians, I mean, plumbers, musicians, doctors, you know, the contractors, doesn't matter. You can be friends with anybody. So that's what I felt. A couple of days ago, no, actually a couple of months ago, I'm getting a letter. So this is already an internet time, right? Mm-hmm. Who writes letters? Cello Biafra is writing me a letter with his hands. Hey, dude, this was great meeting you. Here are my contacts. If you need anything, please let me know. Fuck, I mean, what a nice guy. Mm-hmm. And he sent me back to the release of Alternative Tentacles. Soon after that, we exchanged the phones. And soon after that, he's like, hey, my friend Billy has a record label. I think you guys might be a great fit and he might be interested and you should be interested. It's my recommendation to talk to him. I have no idea who Billy is. You know, I have no idea who Billy is. And talk to Billy. Billy's really a nice guy. I'm like, what the fuck? What a nice people, you know? And then I realized that Billy's a bass player of Faith No More. And all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of this thing that, you know, of people that me as a person from Balkans, you know, only heard about, right? Mm-hmm. And what kind of talking about, we wrecked the record, one record, two records, three records, you know, life goes on, we're really good friends. Now everything is just normal, you know, everything is great. And just COVID just hit. You just said you had COVID. Like COVID was like 2 years ago. And I'm on my balcony and he's in his house trapped in San Francisco. We're talking once, let's say once in 2 weeks. Everybody's bored, you know, like, what the fuck, man, what are we going to do? His mom is 93. My mom is 88. So that's also, like, that's what we're talking. What are we going to do, man? I mean, it's the life sucks, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, remind me, this is how he talks, remind me. I mean, this shit's going to be over, but remind me that why did we never release anything? I know you're not on a Billy's record label anymore. And we can print your vinyls. That's expensive. And I'm like, yes. And that was it. Basically, we don't have a contract. It's just that's how it is. That's how we did with Bill, too. You know, you with friends, that's how it goes. And then he chose to, he said, I like Muhammad and I like King. And those are the songs that I'd like to introduce my audience with. And he's right, you know, and I'll tell you something that why that is so amazingly appropriate to us in this moment. Because he is... what he's giving them a taste of us. That with this is the first time, thanks to Jello Biafra, that we are accepted by a punk rock / metal community in the world. It's not that we weren't liked by our colleagues. I know that, you know, Serge told me the System of a Down was listening to our records in their all in their bus while they were touring. You know,
well, look, Gino, I hope you have time to have a really, you know,
yeah.
First off, I want to, for clarity's sake, I grew up in California. I live in Australia now, but I've had a huge privilege in life. I mean, I've never seen war. I've never seen conflict. I never had to worry about where my next meal was coming from. And as a consequence, I know very little about world affairs. Look, my hobbies, I collect vinyl records, I indulge myself, I have little discipline, and I'm pretty much as soft as they come. So I want to put that out there, because I'm probably going to ask you some stupid questions, especially on global conflicts and history and that sort of thing.
I'm a son of a judge in Sarajevo, and talking about privilege, I know what the privilege means, trust me. For the war, I'm really a privileged kid, and then shit happens. And then you have no idea what hits you, and all of a sudden you're on the other side, you know. So I pretty much know both sides.
Okay, so you grew up in Sarajevo, and you said both your parents were professionals, lawyers, if I understand right.
Yeah, my dad was a professor at Law University, and my mom was an attorney. And then my dad died, and I was 9 months old. She never remarried. I don't even know anybody in her life. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how that is. But then she became a judge, and then she became a president of a court. Then she became a president of Supreme Court and Supreme Court justice.
So your mother was a Supreme Court justice. Are you the only son? Are there other siblings?
Nope, I'm the only son. I am.
You're the baby.
I'm the cursed guy. Yeah.
So, at a young age, were you always interested in becoming an artist?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I know the answer is no for many people. For me, it's, I was nine. I always jokingly said that I always wanted to be looked at. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's it now, because now the product of my work is way more interesting to me and more important. And even being looked at, validation is a great thing, but now I really, really, every single day. I mean, when I was younger, it was really important for me to, you know, to be liked. Mm-hmm. When I was nine, I figured out I want to be a musician. And that was my wish. I didn't know exactly what. I loved playing drums. That was my first love. But also singing was something that I was doing okay. I was good at. And everybody was hoping that that's going to pass and never come back. But it didn't.
So as a youth, you know, your dad wasn't around. He passed when you were 9 months old.
Yeah.
Your mother was professional. She's a single mother, but, you know, very professional, and she's rising in her own industry. People are looking after you.
Yeah.
Is there money in the house? Can you buy records? In Sarajevo at that time, were records, you know, easy to get?
We are a very sophisticated family. And that's, I shit on my aristocratic background, but I am very happy for it. In that terms, Nate. Mm-hmm. In that terms, in that aspect, I profited greatly because I had every record I wanted. I had every book I wanted. I was taught Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, Roman mythology when I was in the second grade, first grade, second grade. That those were my book stories. You know, my aunt was. Sure, you know, there's a bad story. Those are bad stories. Now when I'm writing this opera right now, and now when I'm writing a story about life of Nikola Tesla, I'm still having Prometheus and Zeus fighting their Titan versus gods battle, you know, over the backs of the superheroes on Earth. You know, it's just like everything is a mush right now, but I'm very happy. Yes, I did have vinyls, and I don't have them anymore because I had to leave my apartment, my condo.
Right.
And they basically, Dan actually asked me, Nate wants to know, do you collect records? And that's like a sore spot in my heart, because now they're coming back and my friends, Biafra starting and everybody else, are giving me records. And some, you know, people are finding three old records of Gino Banana, my pop band. Mm-hmm. Which I, you know, that's my beginning. It doesn't matter. It's that's, you know, it doesn't matter. It's different. And I'm getting, now I have shit, some records, you know, but it's like this big of a pile of the records. It's just instead of like rooms and rooms, like, if you're ever lucky enough to see Jello Biafra's, I don't want to talk about his privacy, but he's got.
He and I have talked. He's been on the show. Oh, yeah. We've talked about his
records. You know what he has in his
house? Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Whoa. The guy never left that world, which is, so I'm kind of jealous at you and him and all of you guys that can do that, because there is something, and this is my reason why it's coming back. There is something very voodoo ritualistic about it. You take the record, you don't open the record and put it on to listen to, you take it and you look at it. And you look at the design. So there is the relationship with you and the visual design. You open the record, you go inside, you read who's done it. And by then there somewhere you are going to put it. And while you're putting it, you're still reading it. And then you're analyzing A1, A2, A3, A4. Why did they do it that way? You're thinking, it's a good mix, like whatever. B-side. What the fuck? They're starting with a slow song on a B-side. Why? You know, and then later, why not? That is so lost.
As a youth, did you have access to Western music, or was it mainly music out of the Balkans?
No. Former Yugoslavia was a modern country which was communist until 1948. Then Tito said no to Stalin, and Stalin and Russians never entered it.
So how did you get the Western record? Like, what was the music that you were listening to as a youth? What are the records that inspired you to be a musician and to practice your craft?
Okay, my first record, you're not gonna laugh. Why would you laugh? One of the best singers ever. Doesn't matter that he's not in my from my was Tom Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fucking, the other day I'm looking at him. So he's still alive. He's performing with an amazing band. And it's like, it's an intimate show, right? It was Delilah. And I wanted to sing like him. And till this day, I sometimes want to sing like him. Mm. I was watching him the other day, and I was with my wife. And she's a, human rights activist, feminist. Yes, I am too, And I'm like, fuck this guy, man. This is total man crush. I want to be him. I so want to be him. And she's like, he's a misogynist. He's a misogynist. I said, what do you mean? Well, he left a lot of women, and he's into kind of women. And stuff. He's a fucking Tom Jones. he's a fucking Tom Jones, the guy who invented throwing bras into his face. On the stage. But I'm not subscribing with misogynism today at all. I'm not defending it, but it's just Tom Jones is a hero for me. Since that moment, he's a fucking motherfucker singer, and means every word. Means every word that he sings, he fucking means it. And that's what I got from him first.
Mm.
Then after that, not going more serious. I'm not going to tell every single record that I listened from the domestic but then Uriah Heep came to my turntable, to my gramophone, and then before Uriah Heep, before Deep Purple in Rock.
Ooh.
Deep Purple in Rock changed my life. I wanted to sing like Ian Gillan, and I wanted to play drums like Ian Pice. And at that moment, I thought that's their name. whoever I like is Ian. Didn't want to be named Ian because it was a stupid name. I'm like, fuck, they could be named David because I like David Bowie as well. Didn't know why I like David Bowie because it was so different. But what I liked about him is theatrical changes and melody lines that are weird.
So you went to the States as a teenager originally, just for a short trip, is that right?
No, for ninth grade.
For ninth grade, okay. And which part of the U.S. were you in?
Colorado. Denver, this Biafra and I were there at the same time.
I was gonna say, he's from Boulder.
Yeah, well. That's real. Like, he's in Boulder, and they told me you got to do something else but music. And I said, okay, I'll play basketball. Mm-hmm. That's not what they expected at all. Because I love basketball, I was good. I can still hold my own, and on a 3-on-3 buckets, maybe some pickup games. I know Sean Kemp from Seattle Supersonics. His daughter Bella and my son Kai went to school together, so we kind of doing some pickup, sometimes some work. I'm still trying kind of to be in shape. Mm-hmm. And I started playing basketball there.
At what point did Zov come to be? Was that high school? Was that directly after high school? When did that happen?
Oh, Zov happened in high school. Zov happened when I came back. I had drums. I was one of the rare people who had drums. And, I had drums, and I played with bands. And Zov was a kind of teen supergroup. The best of all played in Zov. And today, this singer of it is a huge mega pop star. And I do what I do. The other guy is a painter. It's pretty much, and we had a hit. It really happened to be a hit. And it's a hit to this day. The other day, they told me that the bassist who wrote a song and the singer who was a star after that are in court over that song. Who wrote it?
Is that Go Ubica?
Yeah, Golubica, exactly. They're in court. And I'm like, and this Grandpa Guru is going on, and they want to talk to them, and they both don't talk to each other, as well as some of my American friends do because of Trump. They don't talk to each other, and they don't want to be in my movie because they don't like each other. Fuck you, guys. I mean, you know, shit. How old are you? I mean, we were smarter when we were kids than now.
So what was Zov a creation of the company, Discoton, or was there a label, or was there a group, or even the state pulled together Zov?
Discoton jumped on it and destroyed it.
Okay.
But they jumped on it to make money. They made money and then destroyed it. Zov was a creation of us. We were playing and we made a hit, and it was on the radio, you know, and we recorded two songs, and there were three songs, four, whatever. They were on the radio, and one of them became Golubica, became a mega hit. And Zov jumped on us and released the record. And we're in the process of doing the album. My mother is unhappy, seeing like in front of her eyes, I'm starting to make fucking money, you know, and like everything, you know, I mean, it's really working right for me, but not really for my family. And then the A&R of the company, who also had a band, ditches the singer to his band. And the band broke up. So destroyed the young band, and they were like in their 40s at the time. You know? And that's the end of Zov. Until this day, when I see my friend who's a singer, we don't talk about that at all. And I said, you know, like, then I mentioned this guy's name, and his time said, he says, I would rather not talk to you about that. He's my friend. He will be my friend forever. I used to, you know, his daughter was born, and you know, it's just but him and the bass player never were friends anymore, and they, you know, they're now on the court, which is kind of a dick move. Not the court is on that, but dick move to claim. So come on, guys. I mean, you know, and then they invited me, and I said, fuck no. I mean, yeah, I know who wrote the song. The bass player wrote the song, but don't fucking get me. I don't want to talk shit about my friends. You know, I can't.
So you're in high school. Zov has a hit with Golubica. There's another single too, Godina. How does your life change being in high school? I mean, you're still studying, or are you now realizing, wow, I really can be an artist?
Oh yeah, I'm in. I'm an artist. I have to go to school because, I mean, I have to go to school, right? That's not enough. Somehow it was never an option for me to quit the school. Yeah, this older drummer came in once upon a time, who was also a son of a judge, and you know, he was kind of semi-drunk when he came to tune my drums, and he told me, okay, I'll come tomorrow morning and I'll detune it again. And I said, well, you know, I'm in school tomorrow morning. And my mom was listening to this conversation. She said, well, dude, you have to make up your mind. You're going to school or you're going to play drums.
So you have a hit. You put out a couple of records. You've tasted a bit of fame. Then Zov breaks up. There's a few years until Gino Banana comes together. How what was your journey like from Zov to Gino Banana?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay. Grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up.
Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside,
so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new.
Turn a $5 record into a $25 functioning collectible.
Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with two Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VinylGuide10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VinylGuide10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. So you have a hit. You put out a couple of records. You've tasted a bit of fame. Then Zov breaks up. There's a few years until Gino Banana comes together. Yep. What was your journey like from Zov to Gino Banana?
I had to go to the army. I did that. And then I came back to, and Zov wanted to continue with a new singer. I continued a little bit with them, but I said, I just couldn't anymore. And I never thought, I'm very much a band guy. Never thought this is going to happen. This is the first time when I'm seeing that something can end. You know, some of the bands can end, and I'm gone from that band. I want to play in another band, which was forbidden. Like after their sixth, seventh show, the club scene starting. The club scene. So we're talking 1981. Mm-hmm. The club scene starting, and I'm drummer for this. You know, the book Little Prince. We named ourselves after the book, I'm 20, and they're like 19. I was the oldest in the band all of a sudden, from the youngest in the band being 15, 16. Now, Zov, I was 15 when Zov went in, you know, and then when I went into Zov, and then I'm playing drums, and we got forbidden. The newspaper started writing how we're horrible people and, you know, whatever. You know, a couple of songs are very challenging songs. Punk rock scene got up, and that's how I entered the punk rock scene as a person with an opinion, and started having this respect from some punk rock people. Later on became writers that even when I became a pop singer, they always talked to me like, we know that guy. This is something that he just does. He believes in different things. And, you know, I was always very outspoken. So, you know, I did believe in different things. But then, Gino Banana was supposed to be symbiosis of rock and roll, jazz, and some kind of a post-new wave funk. Think David Byrne and
Talking Heads.
Yes, yeah, that was supposed, but with a different singer, kind of thing. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Prince, that, you know. I also wanted to go drag a little bit because I like David Bowie. It wasn't the time. Never was actually sexually profiled because some of the people who did that, they were automatically gay. For me, nobody actually. I don't know why. Now I can still be very open about my support, but never nobody would really attack me. We did a good first album that I really liked. At the time, those records were selling a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we sold 25,000 records of the first album, mm-hmm. which in any other country would be huge, except mine. It was like average. It was like, you know, they thought that we are much better bands than we are commercial artists, right? Right. And they said, well, you know, that's amazingly, that same guy who stole my first singer really believed in Gino Banana. It wasn't the payback. It was just, he really believed, he really like, you know, you like, you're a talented songwriter and you do what nobody else does. So go for it. Second album happens. And I make a hit. Huge. I mean, humongous, huge enough that yesterday people were asking me to sing it. People who were 25, who were not even in the plan of their parents getting together at that time, you know. And the hit that was supposed to be Shakespeare. I've always wanted to have some sophisticated touch to Gino Banana, but record labels like, okay, now it's your moment to do 100,000. You got to do the fucking 100,000. Everybody else, 105 bands are doing 500,000, but you got to do 100,000 because that's going to put you on a map. Blah, 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 and then you can do what the fuck you want to do. Fine. But I gotta have something to catch on. I mean, to have the reason for that album, what we were talking about, existence. Okay, do it with words. Do it with whatever. Don't do it with music. Okay, fine. I simplified the music. Meanwhile, in that period that I was doing anything, I graduated from the law school. Not all the way. I actually ended everything but 8 exams, which I told my mom, I'll do it when I'm in my 30s. Poor woman.
Well, maybe the 2030s, you know.
No, I did it.
Oh, you did
it right.
Okay.
Yeah, I did it. But I did what I said I'm going to do, but it wasn't just, she likes to control people's lives. So that wasn't me. So I made it, and then I started, my friend Darko Lukic, with all of this, I started being very active in human rights and seeing on the other side. So being a commercial artist, but before this second record, really being active in promoting LGBT rights and promoting the queer art, because I saw it from David Bowie, mm-hmm. and I saw it from Freddie Mercury. And if my heroes are there, I know that Bowie was straight and Freddie was both, you know, but then I realized it doesn't matter. It's about human rights. You got to be very big on that. Or otherwise you're not, you can't compare yourself to them. Right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so I started my friend Darko, who all of a sudden, he's amazing artist. He's a writer out of this world, later on very famous, today very famous in Germany. He became a director of National Theatre Drama Department. And I worked on that with him a lot. He's one of the first openly gay playwright and personalities back there. And I started composing for the theater, and I got introduced to Shakespeare, and I got taken. And I started like making it up, because all of a sudden I'm in the middle of this, you know, minds, great, smart people, you know, and I'm just a musician. And I started fucking reading books. I gotta catch up on that shit. My mother should see me now. You know, like, now I can study, right?
Yeah.
So that album that had a hit had a backbone in Shakespeare. Nobody knows that except me, which is fine. And this song, I hated it. I kind of like my guitar player. He wanted like, oh, I fucking hate this song. I want it off the record. And we didn't. And like instant hit. It's instant,
Which song was that?
Macha Moe Chupavo, My Hairy Pussycat.
Ah, got it. Okay.
It can be translated in many different ways. And I did it like that, very ambiguously, in many different ways. Nobody understood that. Everybody heard just the chorus, and it became loved and hated at the same time. Until this day, it's loved and hated. Haters are saying like, oh my fucking God, this is like the horrible, horrible sucking up to the audience, or not sucking up, but horrible kind of attention grabbing, right? And the other is like, you don't understand. And the other is, oh, this is, his voice is so beautiful. You know, it's just like, they're still arguing about that song.
So it's still so beloved. You still get requests for the song. And then there's Gino Banana has one more album after that, America.
Yeah.
So going into America, how did that hit shape the next album, America?
I want it to be more challenging instrumentally. I missed my first album. My first album, I think, is still the best album I made. Sonically, Not sonically. It was not good recording. I wish we did better. I mean, one of the greatest producers later on, who in Croatia, pop producers, came. You know, I invited him to be a producer on our album, and he did it. Bregović was supposed to be the producer on that album, but then he told me, oh, dude, I can't do it, but you have to release it. That's a great advice, because you never get rid of those songs. You've got to make move for the other songs. Mainly so, he said later on to me, oh, dude, I was profiling against your band. I mean, I love the second album much more than the first, which is totally different from me. I totally like the first album way more. And the third album was more adventurous. It didn't rise to that to that expectations, my own expectation, but commercially very. The second album, of course, went at 100,000. We did it finally for them. The third album is very. I got some kind of a respect right now, and I won this big festival. That's one song, Mesam, which was kind of a Grammy and thing, and. We became a serious band. We played well, and you know, it was good. Kept making money.
So Gino Banana, it's very successful. You've got money coming in. You've got respect. You're selling a lot of records. In that environment, had the war not broken out, what would have happened with Gino Banana? There were plans to continue recording. There was a fourth album coming. You probably would have stayed on that treadmill, yeah?
Yeah, I would be a different person. I probably found it, and I'd be a little bit more active in theater, probably. That was my plan. I had another play that I was writing. I was writing a film. I was in some movies. I was doing just a regular job of a frontman of a famous band, you know, and I was... I wanted to go back and to be a good musician, to do something that I'm proud of rather than making hits. That would probably happen, but also what would have happened? This guy who stole my singer, that liked me and basically pushed Gino Banana. He hated Zov, actually not hated, but destroyed Zov, pushed for his own interest, pushed Gino Banana. He was the director of the record label, retiring, but he did not have a diploma. Here I'm with a law degree coming out, and the record label's like, yeah, I mean, you know, they're setting me down saying there's not many musicians who can talk and kind of be, you know, because for that position, you need to have a university diploma. Definitely not with a university diploma. And we would like you to consider to slowly take over this major record label thing, and when maybe one day to groom you for the CEO and that would probably happen, because I got tired of. Now I know that. I then didn't know that. I still did not change. I still am not a war profiter. I'm still, you know, I'm a war profiter because I realized in between the grenades that, you know, life's too short to fucking waste it on anybody else, whatever, and for other people, you know. You got to play what you like and what you do and what you do the best, right? To go back to your roots, what you, who you good, where you good, right? But in this moment, no, it was all fine. It was great. You know, I also wanted to kind of be more significant in my own eyes. So right there, there is, you know, there my victory against the my demon who wanted me to be that up there competition guy, right? My victory, me, an artist guy, the energy guy, I think that was like, would be present, but not as significant, not as drastic as it is right now. Please, Nate, write this down, because this is something that I need to write. I never said this in the movie. This is the first time I'm saying this. And I'm just seeing, I'm pretty much seeing through the clouds right now that I thought that the war totally changed me, but I think there was always that battle between me and my demon, the guy who wanted me to be a voice of majority in me, that is, wants to do what I want to do, honestly. and that I'm not majority. I'm not. Mm-hmm. And that basically, I think what would have happened when I think what would have happened with your question that probably nobody asked me before. Wow. Thanks, Nate. Yeah, I see that battle right now. I probably would have gone to some semi-funk jazz record, you know, maybe do some metal stuff too, but some more extreme stuff, produce other people, try to make more out of the quality of music and the lyrical content, write theater plays, and be a CEO of Discotone.
Because the way I read that, and this goes in line with what I know about you and your career, is you have a desire to move forward, to conquer, to innovate and try new things. And given the circumstances you had, if there was no war, then with on that playing field, you would have played the game as you knew. You were a pop star. You had contacts at Discotone. You sold a ton of records. You would have pointed your warrior instincts toward that battlefield. Once the war hit, your motivation changed, but the inner warrior within you was still there, and so went on to conquer other things.
First of all, I wouldn't say ton of records, a lot of records, yes. You know, it's not like this was not a mega pop hit, but in the realm of everything else, what I was doing, it was really, it was a lot. Mm-hmm. Second thing I would say, to conquer in that world where I live in, yeah, you got to swim in the world where you live in innovation, but yes, but there's something that I learned from Christos Govetas, the Greek musician, the father of my violin player, Eleni. He said, you know, his life is a little different than mine. He plays with amazing musicians. He's a folk musician. You know, he said, you know, when you make something over there somewhere, you are jealously keeping it, thinking that it's really huge what you did. And everything you do around that, you're trying not to fuck up what you already did. You're trying not to lose the audience, like Trump. Like, you say whatever you think that your audience is going to smoke, you know. You're trying all of that, and you get lost. And once, if you forcibly get removed from that place, physically, mm-hmm. you realize that what you made, maybe it's not even that big. And even if it is big, because right now, as you said, yes, I pretty much had, you know, very successful band that wasn't all the way pop. For that band, amazing sales, theater, movies, teaching at some academies too, you know, diploma, record label coming to me saying to you know, inviting me for my older age, right? You know, because you don't play after 30s, you know, then just, be a CEO, fuck it. You know, all of that is a legitimate success, but it's a success of that guy, of the demon guy, of the guy who actually was hiding, who got born hiding behind the curtain saying, fuck them, you know, you're going to show them. It's not my success. Then you, when you get removed, you see that what you did, it's not even that big. And there's so many other things in your life that to do rather than retire. You know, I would retire. I would retire if war didn't came in. If I'm a war profiter, I think now, who knows? I mean, maybe I would be with my, at times, wife. I'm three times married. with a lot of kids, and you know, we would have a house in Sarajevo, and you know, pretty good life. I'd be huge now. I'd be eating and drinking, and probably have a problem with cholesterol, maybe even a heart attack until now, like my friends. Mm. You know, and who knows?
But what? But why do you say you're a war profiteer? Because, as I understand, the war took a lot of the, I guess, the original luxury away, but it changed you as a person. Yeah.
Yes. Material-wise, they did, but in my soul, it purified me. It showed me who I really am. It showed me that I'm the happiest when I sing every song like it's like my last song.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have 5 minutes. 5 minutes to sing. Go sing. There's nothing that compare with that, mate. Nothing. There is no other feeling. My demon cannot get me on stage. He is allowed everywhere else. Right now, he's here. He's like telling me, hey, you promised those people, you know. But yesterday before the show, oh my fucking God, how many people are going to be in Belgrade? Last show was huge. I don't want to go down. I don't want to start competing with yourself. David Bowie said that a long time ago, like, fuck, I need to stop playing old songs. I'm just competing with myself, you know. And it's just, Nate, I'm a dual personality, and stage is when I'm by myself.
Mm.
I wouldn't do that for anything in the world. I remember when Novoselic and I were like doing some jam session in Crocodile, and I got on stage thinking that I'm going to be teaching, you know, theater from now in America. So, you know, again, retirement, like, go on a high note. I was always fearing of being an old musician who's trying, want to play, but nobody wants to listen to him. Right now, I'm an old musician who still, you know, I remember getting on stage saying, fuck, this is what I do. This is what I like to do. In the same thing when I'm doing the seminars right now for the psychology or teaching also at college, Cornish College of the Arts. When they give me the microphone, it's the thing that I really, really, right now in this moment, I have a great time. No, it's more, I would be happier if you and I are talking about some other stuff than myself, because I've told this story many times, but you know what I mean right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I recognize that. Those 3 years of the war shaped you in such a radically different way that the way I read it is you were in the bubble, what you considered on your path to success or being very successful. And then after the war shaped you to become a humanitarian rather than being selfish, looking after your own career, things like that. You're now looking at how you can be the biggest force for good in your world.
Yeah, the pragmatic side of me. War neutralized my demon, neutralized the pragmatic kind of me, and also made me realize in everything we do, we're not alone. Everything bad that happens to us, and especially what we need to know, everything good that happens to us, what we really need to know, is we didn't do it ourselves. Somebody else helped us, and mm-hmm. you need to acknowledge that, because subscribing your success, or, I mean, your failures, we usually do, but success to any kind of success, to your own genius. It's not just arrogant, it's also unintelligent. You know, it's for everything in the world, somebody else helped you.
Mm-hmm.
So now, I still didn't do one thing. It's very important that I pay back. You know, I got help by John Baez, by Phil Alden Robinson, the director of Field of Dreams, by Chris Novoselic, by Jello Biafra, by Billy Gould, by you, by everybody that I work with. My band, oh my fucking God, what would I be with my band? Like, they're the best musicians on the planet of the earth, fucking planet earth. You have no idea how humongous, huge they are. And without them, I'd just be Gino Banana. You know, it's that I'd be trying to come up with the shit by myself, and well, you know, and some things would be different. You know, maybe I would even like them more. But you know, but this is a common world. We all live. It's a collective thing. We all live together. And now I want to pay back. I want to go into the circumstances that are under the bad conditions and find people and arts that need promotion, that need to get out, that their governments don't want to let them, that have obstructions all around them, that, you know, that there's some forces are fighting between each other, not letting them, using them as pawns in negotiations. That's why they cannot get out. You know, that's what I want to do now.
Over the last few weeks, you've been touring the Balkans, and you've been there many times in the last few decades. Going back to those places, like during the war, you know, you would have to run from sniper fire. There's these moments of terror and fright. Visiting those places again, as an older man with wisdom and much time has passed, and of course it's a very different political situation, how do you feel going back to those same places where you took those steps as a target?
I was targeted in Sarajevo. The rest of the places are, you know, I didn't even know what's going on. I'm going to those places right now and I'm looking, fuck, what was happening during the war while I was in Sarajevo being afraid that somebody from here is going to shoot at me? Mm-hmm. It's almost like a movie. I don't have a PTSD of that at all. I have different PTSDs. I have horrible PTSDs. You know, the sounds. When I cry a lot sometimes, I, you know, when I think about injustice, I it's horrible. Sometimes it's, you know, I listen to some stuff that I wrote and I cry because it reminds me. But that stuff, visual, going to the mountain where I was shot, where I kind of calculated where there was a bullet that missed me by this much and was between me and my dog were together. It just went into the couch, into the floor through the couch. That's surreal. I don't really even, yeah. I don't, I'm like, I'm walking, my place was in the area where horrible things were happening. And it's kind of tainted, you know, my not my condo, but that area is kind of tainted. And I'm walking around thinking, what the fuck? Would I really want to have, I would love time machine to go back to see what the fuck was happening there in the minds of people. And, you know, and historian in me and psychologist in me, that later on I became, have a different aspect from it. It's almost surgical aspect of professional that I don't like much about myself. So now, you know, I never thought about that, but now when I'm asking, well, fuck, man, I could have been a little more emotional. But I guess I'm emotional on another side, so this is this is not my my area of emotionless.
When you had the company doing the musical Hair during the war, and then every day you'd have to run to the theater, dodging sniper fire to be able to put on this musical.
Yeah.
Were you the only arts activity that was happening? Were there other companies that were doing something similar?
Okay, first of all, there wasn't a company. There was one older, he's still alive, a theater choreographer who worked with my uncle on a couple of movies, and who asked me, hey, let's do something. We have an open theater. And I said, sure, let's do a musical. I said, sure, like we're not doing anything. We have all musicians in town and instruments and everything, like an open theater, you know. And I said, let's do Hair. And, you know, that was my idea, basically. And he said, how are we going to do that? I said, well, you know, just go start playing music and we'll see what's going to happen. Doesn't matter. What am I going to do? I go into the basement? I mean, you know, what else is out there to be doing, to be done? And then all my musician friends were trapped in the city. Well, otherwise, they would be on the tour, right? But now they're in the city. And they say, yeah, yeah, sure, I will. You know, so now you have on the stage, you know, you say, I sold a bunch of records. You should see how many records the bass player sold. Oh, my fucking God. He was his first album with his first band, Plavi Orchestra, was 500,000 records. And he was there, and the drummer was in a famous band, and the guitarist, and, you know, it was just like, all of a sudden, all of these people, my friends, you know, like, what the fuck? Look at us, the band, the super band, you know? And the singers, like all of the recording singers, like pop singers, rock singers, where they're like, okay, let's just divide the roles and do something else in our life. Because they, and everybody's, yeah. So, of course, that was a huge hit. And, of course, that was good, because usually in Broadway, you have people who do that and only that and nothing else. This is like people that you know from television doing that in a little theater. And of course, we had people for 3 years full every single time. There was no time that people weren't there. Line running between the bullets, literally more important than my life. That's the moment when I realized that life's too short to waste it on material wealth and on anything. That money is absolutely not important. And I changed. That's the war profiting moment. Yeah. So after that, you asked a very good question. Everything, we were first, but then everything started going other theater plays, other, we were the first, but theater plays, poetry nights, exhibits. You know, there's no television, there's no electricity, there's no running water, there's no life. You only have that. And that's art. Art was beginning of the civilization when people were drawing on the in the caves, right? And on themselves too, right? and then the guy came out all tattooed and you know, artistic, and from his cave, and saw the other cave, said, fuck, that guy has a bigger cave and he has a younger wife. War! And that's it. That's the civilization. That's the beginning of the civilization. So now, when the civilization is disappearing, I realize, yeah, we're going to stay, because it's going to go the other way around.
Now, once the war ended, once the activity ended, how did you get discovered to then go to the U.S.?
So people started coming to see here, you know, and people from the world started coming here. And I didn't know who the people are. You know, Christiana Mampour all of a sudden has an interview with me. Now I know she's huge, but then I didn't know who she is. And, you know, and then after that, woman jumps on stage. That's Joan Baez. Wow. Okay, great. You know, I remember her having her record, you know, and we sing Let the Sunshine together, you know, Let the Sunshine, you know, and then the guy talks to Lazy, my guitar player, and to me after that, and his name is Phil Alden Robinson. We don't know who that is, but then we figure out that he directed and wrote The Field of Dreams and The Sneakers and all of the other Academy Award things, you know, and wants us to come to the United States and perform here. Then I started going bananas, saying, fuck, let's. We got together. We go on a plane, and the plane never leaves, because the UNPROFOR, United Nations Protection Forces, did not want to let us go. They let people go in and out, but they didn't let us go because they didn't want that image of Sarajevo coming out, that we're actually smart, sophisticated people. They wanted a picture of the, you know, fucking, you know, primitive tribes fighting each other. That's it. That's what they wanted, and that's what they got into the world. You know, when I see the picture of Sarajevo in the world, I always see a woman on a horse. And for my 30 years at the time, life in Sarajevo, I have not seen a horse. I don't know. I mean, I had to go into mountains to see the horse. And horses I saw in the football games when the police was kicking ass of the writers. That's pretty much that was the horse's turn, you know. But people lie, and my job was to go to the United States and tell them that they lie. And Phil wanted to do that. Thank you, Phil. And Joan wanted to do that. Later on, Chris, later on, Biafra, and all of these guys, they want to do that to see how much profiling and lies are there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I basically, so Lazy and I, they didn't let us, but then we could have gone by the plane and we can run through the tunnel. So I ran through the, Lazy got hurt. Oh, fuck. Lazy got injured. Lazy got hit. You asked me that. And I mean, my friend who started and did hair with me got hit between the eye and the nose with the shrapnels ending in his hypophysis, taken by the doctor without running water, electricity. and here, there he is in Seattle right now. So he went to the hospital. I went to the UNPROFOR, United Nations Protection Force, saying, fuck you, motherfuckers. You know, you didn't let the hair out. Okay, fine, fuck you. But you got to get him out, at least save the life, one life. Come on, one life. You owe us that. For destroying our destinies, you owe us that. And they did. One woman, I remember her name is Anne-Marie Dupre. Thank you for her. Thanks to her, he stayed alive. And he stayed alive, but he would be in that conditions, probably lay down in a bed for the rest of his life. Now he's very much alive and great guy. He went to Denmark. I ran under the tunnel. We met in New York City because Phil arranged visas. And we went into the Congress and started talking about everything that I just told you about. You can imagine me being vocal as I am. I only had long hair and short beard, but that's the difference. So they're listening, saying, yeah, but the war in Bosnia is right now kind of, that was 94. It's kind of slowing down, you know. Do you have anybody in Haiti? So that's where the war was, you know, bloody. Mm-hmm. So the blood, if it's fresh, really is not interesting, you know. I got so disappointed. I started, you know, planning to go back home, but then they said, well, you know, maybe you can stay here and work. And then I went to New York City and met with Ahmed Ertagun and the CEO of Atlantic, gave him an idea. We made a song, Killing Me Softly, during bombing of Sarajevo in metal version. And he said, oh, this is great. And I said, well, you guys want to release it like Atlantic? And he's like, nah, you know, there's not enough Bosnians here. All the Turkish men, he's Turkish, you know, are coming to me. But, you know, there's not Turks in either. You know, there's much more Turks than Bosnians, but yeah, not enough. I have to tell you, too bad you guys are not black. And a year later, Fuji's Refugees with an idea and everything went with Killing Me Softly. Huh? Somebody always helped you with something. Right?
So this is 94.
Yeah, 94. Yeah, I've read a theater play in 94-5 Behind God's Back about everything that I was just talking to you about that played in Seattle and New York and other places. And me and Lazy, we got green cards from that thing and went back to Sarajevo to live. But the economy came back and all my ideals, I'm like, let's do something, you know, all the plans that I had. And everybody's like, yeah, how much money is that? Ooh, fuck, you know, and then I got invitation to this kind of a, at the time, Ministry of Culture saying, sir, you know, your art is secular. We are very nationally and religiously right now divided. We don't have a war. Everything is great. But, you know, people like you are not helping our national identity, you know, and maybe you should go to the Serbian side. And I'm like, fuck, man, if I wanted to go to the Serbian side, why did I endure the war here? I called Bill and Joan and I just came back. I figured out Sarajevo needed me. I needed Sarajevo. I did this to stay normal, maybe helped other people be normal. I am now going to go and be loyal. I was loyal to Sarajevo. Now I'm going to be loyal to myself. And I came to Seattle, where my play was, and started Culture Shock.
Mm.
And you know the rest.
I would love to have you back on, Gino, to talk about all of the recording catalog of Culture Shock, because there are so many different albums there. And working with Jack and Dino, there are some very rare records of Culture Shock, I'm sure you know. Is the plan to start releasing some of those albums through Alternative Tentacles?
Yes. The plan is... with the single, the vinyl single, the blue vinyl, yay, is out. And we're selling it, right? I think we're almost out. I got to call Biafra to tell him, like, we didn't plan this. good. So the plan is to release the new album that we're right now playing. We released kind of two songs out of the new album. I'm not that happy about sound. We'll see what and how and where. But the new album is supposed to be released by the end of this year.
Oh.
And by the end of this year. And you know how the printing is. You probably know better than I do how the printing goes. 8 months.
It's starting to get shorter now. It's starting to get shorter now. So I've heard it's below 6 now. So maybe we'll see that album around the same time of the documentary.
That is like, I didn't plan this. This is what it is. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Documentary is in, it is in the process of editing right now. And I'm so fucking bummed that I realized that this demon didn't really go away in the war. He started going away before, but I'll tell that in the book.
So, look, Gino, again, thank you for spending time with us here. I'd love to, hopefully, I'll put it out in the universe that maybe there will be a tour of Australia. You know, there's a great big audience here. Not too long ago.
I would love that. That's the only continent we haven't been to. And Antarctica, if you call it.
Gino, again, thank you very much for your time.
It was great talking to you, Nate. Thank you for asking such smart questions.
Thank you, thank you for your time, Gino. Okay, talk soon. Cheers, mate. I can listen to that guy talk all day. I truly hope they make it over to Australia. He's lived the lives of 1,000 men, and he's still got a few more to go. Gino Yevgemovich, thank you so much for coming on The Vinyl Guide. Everyone, make sure you check out the new single of Culture Shock, King Country Mohammed, limited blue vinyl available at alternativetentacles.com. And again, don't forget, there is an extra 30-plus minutes available only to show patrons at patreon.com/vinylguide. Head up there now, help support the show, and get all sorts of extras. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on social media. Tweet them out on Twitter, share them on Facebook. Find some Reddit groups or Facebook groups to post these links in. Even just grab your other record nerd friends' mobile devices, their smartphones, and show them how to get The Vinyl Guide podcast on their mobile phone. I bet they'll love you for it. I bet they'll probably buy you all sorts of jewels and expensive items as well. And again, you can always leave us a positive review over on Apple Podcasts. 5 out of 5 stars, say something nice. That is always appreciated. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.